everyone. This is Christopher at Indie Gen Con, and anyone who knows me will not be surprised that I would go to a gaming convention and end up talking with two filmmakers. I'm here with Chris Thane Owens and Jason Scholes, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves so you recognize their voices.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Chris Thane Owens here.
Hey there, and I'm Jason Scholes.
Now, you two are behind the film that is streaming on Amazon right now, and it is has screened or will screen here at Gen Con.
It screens tonight at 5:30. However, we did just win Best Picture here at the festival.
Excellent. Congratulations. The film is Empire Queen, The Golden Age of Magic.
That's right.
I had an opportunity to check it out on Amazon the other night. An independent filmmaker often goes for, maybe they go for like a light drama, occasionally a sci-fi, often a horror film, because they just really need a good makeup artist, and everything. You guys go for a 2.5-hour epic.
Yeah, well, if you're going to shoot for the moon, actually try to hit the moon.
Right.
Well, absolutely. And as I understand it, this whole thing was sort of inspired by a music video.
That's right. A number of years ago, I did a music video called Shine on Me, and Jay was a producer and in the video. And the whole idea was that we would create a music video that looked like the trailer to a $100 million fantasy motion picture. We shot it on 35mm film, and it did really well for us. It played internationally on television throughout the world. New Yorker magazine called it the best video of the year at that time. It was featured in Rolling Stone. And Hollywood came knocking and said, this would make a really cool movie. The costumes, the characters, everything you guys are doing, have you thought about that? And at that time it was like, well, it costs so much money to make a film. We'll put a pin in it for now. Well, cut to some years later, we actually found funding. We teamed up with some great producers and technicians, and we have a feature film that's winning in festivals and is on Prime Video and soon to be on iTunes, Google Play, and Vudu as well.
Excellent. I'll keep an ear to the rail when it does. I'll
Thank
be sure
you.
To let everybody know. Now, the music video alone, as you said, it looks like a trailer to a multi... I mean, the costumes, the set pieces and everything is pretty astonishing and of high quality and everything. Was it... I have to think it was a little difficult to do that then, but was it difficult to then come years later and kind of match that when actually creating the film?
Well, I'm not so sure if it was difficult. It was actually a bit easier because of the advancement of technology. Mm-hmm. We had already developed the themes of the visuals and so forth, so those were already in our mind of what we wanted to achieve, and it's just a matter of going out and finding the costuming and the settings to suit that. But with the digital era coming on in between from when we first did the initial music video, there was another music video in between called Lightspeed, and that one actually showed us that we could do something long form. For a fraction of the cost of what the initial music video had, what the budget was. So I think in a lot of ways we were enabled to do something very ambitious just by virtue of the times changing.
Now, you filmed just in California and I think I read Oregon?
Yeah, we actually do have some Hawaii footage as well. So largely Portland, all over California, and a little bit of second unit in Hawaii.
Okay, excellent. And a lot of the visuals, I did recognize what you were talking about with the being able to do the digitally, the sort of green screen visuals and everything as well to kind of help.
Yeah, we did have a bit of green screen. That's quite minimal, though, relative to the overall film. I think out of the 100 shooting days, 90 of them were in outdoor settings. So we probably had maybe 3 days on green screen stages for some of the castle interiors and so forth. But outside of that, everything is quite practical.
Yeah. But you, of course, do throw in a really good-looking dragon.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because if you can take a visual effect too far, and then it starts to break down, and I think that, Chris has articulated it best, that Steven Spielberg highlighted that if you show too many frames of Jaws, it just becomes a big rubber shark. And so we took the same approach with our visual effects and the dragon of, like, let's just create the feeling for him, give a little taste of him, but let's not take it too far.
Mm-hmm. Now, the film... you've admitted it, and it's in some of the presses and everything. It does have little homages and shades of things like Lord of the Rings. Princess Bride, my wife was watching it, and she was thinking, there's a lot of Princess Bride in here.
Yeah, it was a big influence for us. We wanted to figure out what our tone was and stick with it. And for us in our budget range, we thought it's better to have it have a sparkle and a tongue-in-cheek element to it as well. So we put a lot of humor in it. And I think all of us on the film love Princess Bride. Yeah. And Harry Potter, too. They mm-hmm. they have a lot of whimsical humor in that, quirky humor.
You know, and we're big fans of such films. You know, so it's the Harry Potter. There's some, you know, Lord of the Rings trekking. There's some swashbuckling Pirates of the Caribbean. You have some Star Wars. You know, there's a lot of themes that are quite universal to these types of films. And we embraced all of these types of things. And, you know, there's certain expectations or certain elements that you see repeated throughout these types of films. And I think we hit almost all of them. The wise old wizard Oracle character. which is our Uncle Rumpelton mm-hmm. and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, very familiar themes put together with our own sensibilities.
I even caught, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but my wife and I both went, was that the Christmas Carol? There was a couple lines where it felt very much from, like, 1951's Christmas
Carol. There is
Carol.
A line there, definitely.
Yeah, that's an influential film for so many of us, that whole Dickens motif of Ghost Christmas, past and future, how the consequences of your life matter, what you do matters. And I'm hoping and I'm glad you guys picked up on that.
I got to talk a little bit about the casting of the film. Obviously, you both star, but the other casting, and not to belittle any of the others, I think the entire cast is a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I think you hit gold with Mary Elise Hayden as your evil queen.
Wonderful. Thank you for that comment.
Super Disney-grade villain.
Oh, she's just... the look, the attitude, everything. It's kind of like, you know what? I just want, like, a prequel film.
What's so cool about that, too, Christopher, is she was in the original Shine music video and Lightspeed as one of the evil queens. She never spoke. Nobody speaks in the first music video, right? So we didn't really know how dynamic of an actress she or C.L. Post, our star, was until we got them on camera, started to run dialogue, like, oh, my gosh, they're wonderful in the film. So that was a pleasant surprise, if you will.
We're very fortunate to have both of them to carry the art of acting for us, because I don't necessarily think that we always wound up finding the strongest actors for everything, but in terms of our lead roles, they nailed it for us.
Yeah, and well, if you've got a really good, strong cast, a core cast, mm-hmm. if you have to kind of go to B or C level, a lot of them will try to sort of play up to the better
Absolutely.
Actors.
Right, no,
sure.
They raised the bar. And, you know, we had CL with us throughout the entire production, and she was always challenging us, coaching us, and so forth, because she's made this her craft, and that's her number one passion, whereas we're more the filmmakers. And so, you know, her emphasis being on the art of presentation delivery and the thespian side of it, we really appreciate her and Mary both for bringing their A-game to the production, which, you're right, did raise the bar for the rest of us.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, they could have very easily went, oh, this is just some piddly little indie. I'm just going to phone it in and read my lines.
That's right. But everybody
they came at it like this was, they were working for Spielberg or
yeah,
somebody.
Thank yeah. you, Christopher. We appreciate that. And I feel like they did that. They felt like we were making something special. That actually took us years to finally get to make it. And through, you know, fan enthusiasm, I think they were like, wow, we're really going to do this now. We're really going to make this movie that people have been saying, you guys should make a movie for years.
And the loyalty of friendship that was established way back in the first music video, followed through with the second one, and it's like, okay, we're going to just carry on with this. And so we became a little troupe, an tight-knit family in many respects.
It's excellent. So what would you think would be, or what did you find to be, like, the biggest challenge finally bringing this film to life, especially after all these years from the beginning, you know, kernel of it?
Well, I know I can say that because it's silent, the music videos, when we first started to go, like, what's our voice? What do we sound like? And what is the tone of the film? All that stuff was not really well defined, so we had to work our way through that. To me, that was a challenge. Jay and I shot a scene early on that's not in the movie where we thought, like, let's just see how we can do this on camera. And we made some humor to it, and we looked at it, and we said, you know what, this will work. This will be fine. And it kept evolving from there.
And I would say that, you know, Chris coming from the music video side of it, and me coming from a lot of short films, You know, we're short. We're used to 5-minute content or less. So all of a sudden, we decided to tackle something that we did not realize would wind up being 2.5 hours when all was said and done. So it was a bit daunting, although we had, you know, the ambition and the belief that we could pull it off. We just had never approached something with such substance before. So going into it, there was a little, I suppose, a little bit of trepidation or maybe lower expectations of what we'd actually achieved. But as the process started to unfold, especially to Chris's point, after that first weekend, realizing like, no, we can do this. And then getting a bit of funding from our executive producer, Kiki, to help us kick off the production in earnest. Then we were able to take a trip to Portland, get some epic sceneries, which helped tie us in, you know, with the scope of the world that Chris had originally envisioned. It's like, you know what? This is possible. And we just kept going and going, and the minutes just kept compiling to winding up, you know, after 4 years of filming, we have a 2.5-hour movie.
And one of the reasons it's longer is we weren't sure if we were going to sell it as a series, that we would break it into 6 episodes, or if it was feature. We basically have both edits. But we loved it as a feature, felt like our pacing was good, and that we're on par with the Harry Potters and the Lord of the Rings as an epic fantasy adventure. And people have been really kind in our comments, going like, look, I saw the running time and I was a little bit daunted by it, but it goes fast, and you guys, your pacing is really good, that it's an enjoyable 2.5 hours.
We did focus on, you know, the filmmaker's convention that if it doesn't move the story forward, it shouldn't be in there. Granted, you can point to a few things and say like, okay, that was just more or less for the fun of it, but I think honestly, most every scene is relevant and does continue to push the story forward, so I don't think we lose our audience in very many places.
Plus, in the first movie, you want to do world building, right? You need to say, this is our universe. And so if we do the sequel, knock on wood, it probably won't have quite the same running time. It'll be more like a 2-hour project. But you never know. We might just, because we want to go all around the world with it, it might wind up being even longer. We'll see.
What was it? The last Peter Jackson one was like nearly 4 hours or
yeah,
something.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, as far as the length, I was the same way when I started, I'm like, oh, this can't be 2.5 hours. They must have some interviews or special features or something at the end of this thing. Like, no, okay, 2.5 hours. But what's fun is I was never at any point kind of going, oh, when will this end? You know, I was enjoying myself.
Good.
I was having a good time watching the entire, and my wife even stayed up for the whole thing.
Okay. We're glad it worked out that way, because in our minds, of course, it's how it should be. So we're glad that the audience also received it in the way that we intended it to be received.
And since the pandemic, haven't you found that when people are binging, they're going like, well, I watched 9 episodes of this show today and I watched 8
right.
episodes. So it's like people have time to watch more and they want to marinate in the world.
Yeah. If we had broken this into a series, they would have watched it in the same day.
Yeah. It's very true.
Yeah.
Right.
Of it is that we intended for it to unfold and no wasted fluff in there. And we did trim things that weren't necessary. You know, I realize now that there's certain elements, you know, Chris would make some edits, and I didn't catch the fact that there were certain bits of dialogue missing. And I never missed it and didn't even realize that they were gone. So you realize that there are elements in a film that you can do without, that initially you might be a little bit married to it, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, you realize that there is a leanness that helps to contribute to the final product. And so we did focus on that.
I think people might ask, why would a film like this, why would it be screening at a gaming convention? And I think the easy answer is, like, this really is like a Dungeons & Dragons
right.
campaign visualized,
right.
complete with side quests mm-hmm. and everything. And that made it, it fits probably better than anyone could imagine.
Well, you know, and the fact that, you know, we weren't familiar with Gen Con personally ourselves until at WonderCon earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had mentioned that this could be a fit for Gen Con, so we started doing our research. And realized that there was a film component to this convention, the film festival. It's like, well, if they have a film component to it, then, you know, clearly maybe we should submit ourselves to that. And realizing that these are our people. I mean, the fantasy crowd, they love it and they embrace it. And we could see how they would easily want to dress up as an Empire Queen character at some point. Maybe there's an Empire Queen board game even in there somewhere.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And for us, we literally got off a plane, got to this hotel, sat down in the room, were there, they started the event, we had been there 15 minutes, and they started to go through the winners, and they obviously say best picture for last, and we're going, well, I don't know, maybe we won, maybe we didn't, and then all of a sudden it's like they show our poster, and it's like, you guys won best picture. It was a really magical moment, because we didn't even have time to catch our breath, hardly.
And I didn't necessarily think of this as a festival film in the beginning, but I wound up having an itch that I wanted to start submitting it around, and we submitted to several festivals, and we wound up winning best feature film at the Sweden Film Awards, which is like, wow, you know, there is a first validation that somebody out in the audience embraced us in a particular way. Mm-hmm. Subsequent to that, we've won two Telly Awards, one for our musical score and for narration, and then now we've just won this next best feature film. So it's like, all right, you know, I appreciate the validation of our audience.
Mm-hmm. And you're getting international acclaim in yes. that too, and that's pretty impressive for a film that is kind of in the genre that's sort of naturally sort of European, mm-hmm. you know, the Sword and Scent, the British, the
that's right,
Robin
old
Hood,
world Europe.
Yeah, old world Europe. And so for a U.S. film, especially an independent U.S. film, to be getting the kind of international acclaim and going, no, you guys did good. Well, yeah, that kind of helps boost the little ego there and feel like, make you guys feel like you did a good job.
Yeah, it's all, yeah. like Jay said, it's wonderful validation. We've gotten some great comments from people throughout the world so far, and I think that's only going to expand as we increase our distribution.
So, yeah, that would be the next question, is what's next? You said it's going to hit some additional streaming services
that's right.
soon.
That's right, and that will be even more global. And then we'll just see. You know, it's all about independent filming. It's not like studio filmmaking where they go, here's your theatrical window, here's $50 million to promote that window, and then it will go to the streaming services afterwards. We have to, you know, take steps and stumble and have victories, triumphs and tragedies along the way.
A lot of unanswered calls and emails in relative to trying to get it out there. So, you know, we feel fortunate to be where we're at right now with the possibility of building more. But, you know, it's a process. The distribution process is just as challenging, if not more so, than the production process.
We had a wonderful validation early on where Warner Brothers was actually going to handle all of our sales right out of the gate. Nobody had even seen the movie except for the company. And unfortunately, because of the changes within there, that company, we wound up, that deal didn't go through. But that was a wonderful, like, hey, you guys, I've got good news. WB wants to take on the picture. Then we wound up going to Amazon straight away, and that's been a wonderful partner for us. And now we have other partners in place as well.
And the key to that is just trying to get the awareness so that people will go to these venues and look for us. There's algorithms and all involved with this as well. So, you know, we're hoping to get to the level of like, hey, if you liked Harry Potter, if you like Princess Bride, you know, maybe you'll like Empire Queen. So we're working out to how do we get to that point where we hit the algorithms properly.
I think there's plenty there for a universe to be built. You know,
right.
You're talking a potential sequel. Or you even half joked about the idea of a game, you know. Absolutely. I'm walking around in the exhibitors room and everything, and like, there's no reason there couldn't be an Empire Queen tabletop game booth somewhere.
And some Funko dolls.
That's right.
Yeah, Funko's the new action figure.
That's right.
You don't look for action figures anymore. You look for the Funko.
Give me the Funko.
Right.
Yeah. You need a Commander Cross bobblehead.
That's right.
For sure. Everybody needs one on the dashboard of their car.
Yes, perfect. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for sitting down and talking with
me. Sure, Christopher, thank you.
I really enjoyed watching the film.
Thank you. I'm looking forward
to seeing how the Empire Queen universe expands.
That's right.
And I'll be watching out for you and watching out for you guys, whatever you do in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for your time.
It's a privilege to be here.